Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the DiaSorin first quarter 2016 results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlo Rosa, CEO of DiaSorin. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, operator. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and welcome to our quarter one 2016 conference call. Let me start reminding you that starting from April 28, Mr. De Angelis retired from his position as CFO of DiaSorin S.p.A., and I want to thank him again for his incredible support in the last 5 years, where we set important pillars for the future success of our company. At the same, in the same date, Mr. Pier Giorgio Pedron was appointed as new group CFO after having joined DiaSorin as a group controller, served as CFO of our North American subsidiary, DiaSorin Inc., for 18 months, and then working with Pierluigi as a deputy chief financial officer. So welcome, Pier Giorgio. And then I will turn the microphone to him to comment the main events and financial results. So first, let me just go through the business, the most relevant business points. And as usual, I will make my comments at constant exchange rate. As you have noticed, this is the first quarter since few that the exchange rate has been working against the company, roughly 1 million euro at the top line, and this is not still related to the effect on the dollar, but more on the Brazilian reais and the renminbi. So we expect that in quarter two, if the exchange rate with the dollar continues this way, we will suffer from a negative impact of exchange as well from North America. Now, said that, again, at constant exchange rate, our revenues in Q1 increased by 6.7%, which is slightly above our guidance, but in line with our expectations. And as far as the CLIA revenues, we registered overall a growth of almost 12%, and this is clearly confirming the success and the completeness of our CLIA menu that, you know, have been the strategic assets on which we have built our installed base of liaison systems. Now, let me talk a little bit, as usual, about vitamin D first, and then CLIA X vitamin D. As far as vitamin D is concerned, revenues grew 1.7%, and this has been since few quarters that we have not been seeing this, and this is primarily due to the increased volumes driven by the agreement signed last year with Quest Diagnostics. So, quarter one is the last quarter where we are comparing results of vitamin D in the U.S. without corresponding revenues in the previous year. By the same token, as far as vitamin D is concerned, we have some effects, some negative effects that are counterbalancing the Quest effect, and the most relevant one is to do with the fact that we have renewed a contract with Sonic. It's a 5 years agreement that expired December 2015. If you remember, we have been exclusive suppliers of vitamin D to Sonic. We have renewed exclusivity for 5 years worldwide of vitamin D. This is a strategic alliance that we have with Sonic worldwide. Sonic is a lab chain that is growing aggressively in all geographies, and very clearly, in order to maintain this exclusivity, we had to provide Sonic a price concession guaranteeing the business again for the next 5 years. So overall, the vitamin D franchise, slight growth as expected, and we will continue to work on it over the next few quarters. Still, as far as Japan is concerned, we have not seen the government issuing any reimbursement, so we don't see in this quarter revenues coming from Japan. As far as Clia XD is concerned, again, as we have seen in the previous quarter, strong growth, 17%, and this is pretty much throughout all the panels of tests, and this is due to a combination of geographical success in some key geographies like Asia that I will comment later, as well as the success of products launched in the last 12-24 months. And one to name is vitamin D125, where we have captured pretty much 90% of the available market worldwide at very high value. Now, if we go to placements, before discussing geography, in quarter one we registered, again, a successful placement of Excel, 132 units installed in the quarter. You know, traditionally, quarter one for placements is light because in China, the quarter one is light as well, and therefore we see installations pick up in Q2 and in Q3. We have deinstalled also Liaison System, continuing our commercial strategy to cannibalize some of this base, residual base, with Liaison XL and increasing expectations in terms of revenues per box. The overall install base today for the group is close to 6,500 systems installed worldwide. Now let's get into geographies. And I will provide you a managerial outlook on data reported as far as Q1 is concerned. Let me start from Europe. Europe continued to show a solid growth in the main geographies. We are up 4.4%, even if, and I would say most of the countries have been growing strongly. Germany grew 6.5%, again driven by success of Clia placements and the stool panel that we have launched in Germany last year, so it works fine. France finally turned positive, and this is due to the fact that the reform that has decreased significantly the volumes of vitamin D testing in the last few quarters. Now a lot is completed, the volumes of vitamin D stabilized, and therefore we see again a return to growth driven by the Clia XD products in France. Last but not least, unfortunately, is Italy, and Italy, which is our domestic market, and has always been growing for us between 3-4%. Is an effect of a heavy reform on testing volume that has hit the country in the last quarter, shows a decline of 4.4%. And that was difficult to predict. We believe that it will continue throughout the year, and we expect Italy to have a negative contribution for the first time since many years. Difficult to understand the outlook looking forward for Italy, again, because this is a reform that is affecting testing volume, has nothing to do with reimbursement, and we will have better visibility later in the year. Overall, Europe growth, again, 4.4%, and we consider it as our main market, is 48% of our revenues. We've invested in Europe, opening a subsidiary in Poland, and we are positive about the overall results of Italy moving forward in the year. Now let's turn to North America. The region in Q1 grew 7%, boosted by the growth clearly the stabilization of our vitamin D revenues, finally with Quest, as well as significant growth over 30% to our Clea XD products, mainly driven in the U.S. by vitamin D125 and our infectious disease and endocrinology panel. So just summarizing, stable vitamin D, increasing growth of Clea XD, so positive outlook as far as U.S. is concerned. Asia-Pacific is proved again to be the fastest growing region for our sales in Q1. In fact, we grew 17.7%, almost 18%. The main contributor to this strong positive trend was again China, which recorded a growth of 74% in Q1. Now, we need to read this number correctly. There has been in quarter one extra shipment of Murex products related to a tender that required the shipping in Q1, and also the comparable to last year quarter probably is comparing a strong quarter this year with a relatively lighter quarter last year. To make a long story short, we believe that China has the potential to continue to grow in the area of 30-35%, and 74%, which is an outstanding result, clearly cannot be repeated in the next few quarters. Notwithstanding that, we continue in China to develop our Liaison XL install base. 26 systems were installed in quarter one. We are approaching 800 systems installed in the country, and we continue to see a very strong demand for Liaison XL coming from all the geographies that since last year in China, all the provinces that have been covered through a renowned, renewed distribution network. Let me also remind you that in this result, still the effect of the Beckman Alliance is negligible, so there is more fuel for growth coming for China from this alliance with Beckman. Last would be Latin America. As far as Latin America is concerned, I would like to comment Brazil and Mexico, which are the most relevant geographies. In Brazil, as you know, last year we decided to retrench because of the local market conditions would not allow an aggressive investment to guarantee growth. We have done a few things in Brazil, including the fact of redirecting our effort into the private sector in order to make sure that we get paid by our customers. We try to limit our exposure to the public accounts, especially in certain regions. Today in Brazil, the public sector is clearly under a strained situation, and the net result is that the suppliers don't get paid. And last but not least, we decided to outsource services that were provided locally, mainly would be logistics and warehousing and administration. We were doing ourselves before all of this, and now we have outsourced it to a third party in order to decrease complexity. In the quarter one, there was still a loss of 6.3% in revenues, but we have seen an increase of placements. We have seen business rebounding. If you remember last year, we had double-digit loss, and we expect by year-end Brazil to turn positive again in terms of growth contribution. Mexico grew 3.7%, is a good business for us, and we got awarded a very important tender in Mexico where we will start shipments in quarter two, quarter three. So we expect Mexico to provide us the usual high single-digit growth for the year. As far as business development are concerned, now let me remind you that in March 30th, we announced the signing of the acquisition of the Focus Diagnostic molecular assets. We think we will be able to close the deal announced in the second quarter of 2016, as we have announced previously. As soon as we have completed this step, we will work together with the management of Focus, and we will come back to the market with our plan for developing this business over the next 3 years. Now, let me now turn the microphone to Pier Giorgio, who will drive you through the financials. Pier Giorgio, please go ahead.
Thank you, Carlo. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. In the next few minutes, I'm going to walk you through the financial performance of DS Sorin in the first quarter 2016. Let me please start from the P&L. Overall, we are very pleased with our first quarter results, which, both in terms of revenues and profitability, recorded a solid growth. Revenues grew at current exchange rate by 5.8%, or almost €7 million compared to last year, and by 6.7% at constant exchange rate. Carlo has already covered the main business drivers behind this growth. I believe it's just worthwhile to mention that we've had some FX headwind from almost all the currencies in which the group operates, with the only exception of US dollar. FX impact is anyway much less relevant than what we have experienced in 2015, as Carlo reminded, about €1 million. Gross profit at €85.8 million in the quarter grew by 8.5% compared to last year. Gross profit ratio over revenues at almost 69% is confirming the positive trend of the last two quarters of 2015, both of which were around 69%, and is better than Q1 last year by 1.7 percentage points. Let me remind you that we closed quarter one 2015 with a gross profit of 67.2% of revenues. This variance is mainly driven by a different product mix and the country mix. In quarter one 2016, we have had higher sales of specialty products, which enjoys higher prices, for example, vitamin D125 and stool panel, and lower sales to distributors, which usually enjoy lower prices. Operating expenses at €45.1 million, or 36.2% of revenues, have increased by 4.6% at current exchange rate compared to 2015. R&D expenses have mainly driven this increase. The OPEX ratio on revenues has decreased compared to Q1 15 by 0.4 percentage points. Other operating income and expenses at €2.5 million in the quarter have been negatively impacted by almost €2 million of non-recurring expenses, mostly driven by consultancy costs necessary to support the project aimed at acquiring the Focus Products business from Quest Diagnostics. EBIT at €38.2 million, or 30.7% of revenues, has increased compared to Q1 15 by almost 9%. Quarter 1 2016 is confirming the ability of DS Sorin to deliver an EBIT around 30% of revenues. The tax rate at 33.3% is broadly in line with how we closed 2015 and lower by 50 basis points compared to Quarter 1 2015, and this is mainly driven by a different geographical mix. Net results at €24.7 million, or almost 20% of revenues, is higher than last year by €2.1 million, or 9.1%. Lastly, EBITDA at €47.2 million, with a ratio over revenues of 37.9%, is better than last year by €4.2 million. Or 9.6%. The variance at constant exchange rate is 10.8%. Let me now move to the net financial position and free cash flow. We closed the quarter with a very strong net financial position at almost €290 million, compared to €268 million at year-end 2015. This means an increase of about €22 million. Quarter one has confirmed our ability to generate a strong free cash flow. We closed the first 3 months of the year with a cash generation of €28.4 million, compared to €26.7 million in quarter one 2015. Lastly, in view of the group operating performance in the first quarter, we confirm the guidance for 2016 revenues, with a growth between 5 and 6% at constant exchange rate compared to 2015. And we raise 2016 EBITDA guidance to about 8% at constant exchange rate compared to 2015. Let me remind you that the previous guidance was a growth between 6 and 7% at constant exchange rate. And now I will turn the line to the operator to open the Q&A session. Thank you.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Maja Pataki of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I will limit my questions to three and then join the line again. With regards to your increasing guidance on the margin level, but you keep your sales guidance as it was, is it fair to assume that you have taken a bit of a closer look at the various extraordinary lines that were impacting full year results and are taking a conservative approach to margin outlook? That's question one. Second, could you help us understand how big the China tender impact was on Q1 revenues, just to understand how the rest of the year should look like from a seasonal swing? And then could you give us some indication on U.S. revenues, how much is vitamin D and how much is actually clear outside of vitamin D? Thank you.
Yes, I will take the second and third question, and then Pier Giorgio will cover the first one. As far as China is concerned, I cannot disclose to you the effect of the tender. However, let me tell you that normalized growth in Q1 would have been between 35% and 40%. So taking away the Murex shipment and plus what we consider an unfair comparison quarter to quarter, the business would grow between 35% and 40%, and this is what we believe is doable in China for the rest of the quarters. As far as U.S., no, we don't provide a split of revenues between vitamin D and non-vitamin D products, for obvious reason in terms of not providing information to competitors. And then, Pier Giorgio, you cover the first one.
Yeah, I will. Thank you, Carlo. So regarding the margins, I believe it's better to look at gross margin. If you consider our gross margin, in the last three quarters, we have had a gross margin around 69%, let me say, which is mainly driven by the very good contribution to what we call the high-value products, which are products such as vitamin D125, the stool panel products, for which we have, let me say, higher prices and even higher margins. On top of that, we have some good economies of scale coming from the increasing volumes, which is helping us to think that we will be able to have a gross margin ratio around 68 and 69%. So considering what happens to our operating expenses, we believe that growth the EBITDA level in the range of 8% constant exchange rate, which means an EBITDA ratio just south of 38%, is fair.
Okay, thank you very much. Carla, just to double-check with you on the U.S., I fully understood that you don't want to give us a split, but is it fair to assume that revenues outside of vitamin D are now meaningful?
Oh, yes. Outside, revenues outside vitamin D are significant, absolutely, and they are rapidly growing, so they do start to affect the overall performance of the country. You also need to take into account that we are discontinuing worldwide our RIA product line, and this is really streamline our operations in the U.S. Where we are short with space with this boom of vitamin D volumes, and therefore in the U.S. There was still a residual RIA customers that we are taking out, and they do affect, in fact, the performance negatively. Obviously, the performance of the U.S. Market they will affect in 2016.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
The next question is from Peter Welford of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my questions. Just firstly, on looking at the cost base, if we look at it sort of going quarter to quarter, I think, I guess particularly the R&D was a little bit lighter, and perhaps, I guess if we just try and think about the run rate, is the quarterly spend in the first quarter, do you think, representative for the full year? And then secondly, just on the Focus Diagnostics acquisition, I appreciate it's yet to close, but can you provide some sort of breakdown perhaps in terms of what proportion of the revenues of Focus Diagnostics are in the molecular segment and what proportion are immunoassays, just to give us an idea for modeling purposes. And then thirdly, just returning to China for a minute, obviously a very impressive result in the quarter, and obviously you've highlighted 30 to 35% long term. I wonder, therefore, are you seeing any impact at all from some of the pressures that some competitors are citing? And equally, is most of your business coming from, would you say, the medium-sized hospitals, the local hospitals, or where do you think the sort of incremental growth you're seeing in China is coming from? Thank you.
Yes, Peter. I will take the last two questions. Focus, no, we cannot provide any information. It's not our business as we speak. It belongs to Quest Diagnostic, and it's confidential information. Regarding China, we do sell into what fortunately is the booming market in China, which is mid-sized hospitals, and we are removed from the larger hospitals where you see consolidations and you see the Beckman Siemens, and all these guys going head-to-head. And interestingly enough, we used to talk about class 3 hospitals being the hospitals and class 2 being a possibility and the class 1 being no possibility because of size. Well, it looks like that because of continuous growth in testing volumes in China, as a result of the influx of people moving away from villages into the cities, now clearly class 2 hospitals are becoming a very accessible market for the Liaison Excel, and the class 1 hospitals are becoming a very accessible market for the Liaison Access. Today we are trying to serve with the Liaison, the old Liaison system. So I think that the difference between us and the rest of the competition is that, especially the larger players, they get into a segment that is becoming very competitive, whereas we stay away from that segment, fortunately enough. And with the Liaison Excel, we go after the booming business in China. On top of that, I think that we were very wise in terms of devising our product strategy, because we continue to be now very solid number one for prenatal testing with infectious disease. That, if you remember, is how we really started this our presence in China. And then we are playing in the very large market of hepatitis and HIV, where there are only 3 to 4 foreign companies having the full menu approved. You have 200 million hepatitis B chronic patients in China, so there's a very large pool of patients and testing volumes accessible for this product. So combination of these very wise strategies are allowing us to stay away from the big fight and being and playing into a very interesting and developing market for China. Pier Giorgio on R&D?
Sure. So usually, if you look at our historical rates, we have R&D costs of about 6% of revenues. And this is give or take the ratio we are experiencing in 2016 quarter one. Q1 last year was kind of low, so I would say that you could, you know, expect the 2016 ratio, if you take aside phasing issues, around again the 6% mark. So there is not a change, a material change in path in terms of our R&D investments.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
The next question is from Scott Bardo of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my questions and congratulations for the results. First question just relates to gross margin, please. And I understand you've confirmed now three quarters or so of 69% gross margins. I think looking back, reflecting also that Q1 is the lower revenue volume quarter for the year for DiaSorin, it also historically has been the lower gross margin quarter. And I just wonder now then that this 69 or so percent that you see in the first quarter, should it be an expectation that you follow your normal trend and progress gross margin from this base over the course of the fiscal year? So perhaps if you can talk about some of the dynamics there, would be appreciated. Mr. Pedron, welcome. I wanted to ask two things, please, specifically on the financial side. Obviously, you've taken a little bit of cost for focus within this quarter, if I understood your comments correctly. Could you give us some sense then, please, on how you see other operating expense, how that's encapsulated with your guidance, if you can give us an absolute number there. And I just wonder if you have had any thoughts on tax and whether you have been able to have a more favorable tax outlook as compared to your predecessor, see any opportunity or structures there which could benefit the group tax rate. I have one follow-up for Carlo, if possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So starting from the gross margin ratio, it is true, Q1 was, the gross margin in Q1 was not particularly high at 67.2%, but if you look at the trend, you see a pickup starting from Q2 15, 68.4%, reaching then the 69%. More than anything else, I believe, you know, more than the lower revenue in Q1 15, I believe this increase is driven by the different mix of products, whereby, again, thanks to Quest, vitamin D pickup, and vitamin D as a product with a very good margin, the vitamin D125 pickup as well. We now are at full steam, at full speed with vitamin D125. The growth of the stool panel, which we completed recently, all of these high-value product strategies is really helping us at gross margin level. So I believe that the 68-69% is a fair mark where I see our business in the next few quarters, also considering that we are enjoying some economies of scale as a result of the increase in volume. Regarding the non-recurring expenses, yeah, most of those non-recurring expenses are driven by costs to support the project to acquire the focus business from Quest Diagnostics. And our guidance takes into account the costs related to the acquisition. It does not take into account the guidance in the non-recurring expenses, any costs we might have during the integration process. But at the same time, our guidance does not take into account the revenues and the margins coming from the Quest business. So you should consider our guidance at, let me say, a constant perimeter. Regarding the tax question, We are not going to provide, you know, details on the results, on our tax rate coming from our focus acquisitions. But when we will release the new plan, which will be done at the beginning of next year, exactly as we did last year, you will see our view in terms of tax rate for the group. Let me just remind you that when we did the last plan, 3 years plan, we forecasted a tax rate at 34%, and now we are running at 33, give or take.
Thanks for the clarity. And I just wondered, and sorry to press on this issue, but I mean, I would regard costs preparing to acquire a business somewhat one-time in nature. So is it possible just to quantify what you expect from the base business as of today, the other operating expenses to be, so I can get a feeling of what the underlying EBITDA progression is, ex the sort of additional costs? That would be very helpful.
We don't provide this kind of details, I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Last one, please, Carlo, if I may. Encouraging that you're feeling confident about closing the deal in Q2. I think you highlighted this before. Am I right to assume then that all energies internally then will now be turned towards focus and the integration, or do you still have good scope capacity within your corporate development team to consider other opportunities even this year? If you could perhaps just comment on the flexibility within the organization. Thank you.
We do have, certainly, we will spend a lot of time in order to manage properly the integration of our businesses. Granted, I think I made a comment last time, we are buying a very successful small company, and I've seen a lot of value destroyed in the past when larger corporations have tried to take in smaller companies. So lots of effort is placed on our side to really leave Focus as an independent company, able to continue their business and develop their own strategy. Now, as far as our ability to continue M&A, look, as if you remember, I spent the last 3 years trying to defend our position, which has always been we need to be strategic in these acquisitions. We cannot use the usual channels. We don't work with banks, and we work through our network. Clearly, and we always said when an opportunity comes, we're always ready to take it. And for that reason, we have accumulated quite a lot of cash, and then we found a good way to put it to work. We continue to look at opportunities, and certainly there is a commitment by our main shareholder that if an opportunity comes, we'll certainly spend time and dedicate time to analyze it. And if it makes sense, as we always did, we will try to find a way to pursue it.
Thanks very much.
The next question is from Stephanie Dobchev of LFGE. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I have two questions. The first one would be on Italy, if you can come back on the new law and the impact you expect from it, and where does it come from, because I was not aware of this. And the other one is on the Japan and vitamin D. When do you expect the reimbursement code, and when do you start? Do you expect to see this business starting in Japan? Thank you.
On the Japan one, look, over the last 5 years, I learned the hard way that trying to guess what the Japanese authorities do, I think you have a better chance at winning the lottery in the U.S., and therefore I will refrain from making precise comments to this. We were supposed to have received the reimbursement already a quarter ago. But then there is this committee that is difficult to understand, who makes the committee that is back analyzing the clinical utility for the SA, because depending on the clinical utility, then they assign different values reimbursement. And as you know, as far as vitamin D is concerned, there are some consolidated data related to osteoporosis, which are clear-cut and acceptable. And then there is a general use for screening for vitamin D, so using vitamin D as a general marker for health. And that's the difference between vitamin D being an endocrinology marker specialized for bone diseases, or vitamin D being an assay that it is used, as it is used in certain countries, it is used for screening purposes and for general supplementation. I think the jury is out, and there's a decision that the Japanese authorities have to make, and I don't want to guess when they're going to make it. So we stay here, and as soon as we know, we will let you know. As far as Italy is concerned, there has been quite a lot of press dedicated to this. Fundamentally, this decree is a decree that intends to make sure that physicians do order test diagnostic procedures in vivo and in vitro in an appropriate way. In fact, the name of the decree is the decree of being appropriate, translated in English. And that pretty much is providing guidelines, very confusing guidelines, to physicians of what to test and what not to test. And it's also introducing a concept whereby improper testing is going to be used to fine physicians, and they're introducing controls using electronic records. So it's a very, very confused situation where physicians don't know what to do, and as a net result, they don't order tests. We have seen declines in volumes in the order of 10% in certain regions, and this is why it's very difficult to understand how this is going to go. So far, we suffered declining revenues of in the north of 4%. If I need to give you my guesstimate, I think we will end up losing 4-5% by year end, but we will get better visibility when quarter two is over, and we'll see where the trends are.
The last question is from Anastasia Karpova of Kempen. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon and congratulations on very good results. Two questions, if I may. First, on margins, I remember in the beginning of the year you were quite cautious on margin improvement driven by the product mix. What has changed during the first quarter that allowed you to upgrade the guidance and take more positive stance on the margins? And for the second question, can you provide some color on how collaborations or partnership with BD and Beckman Coulter and Roche are ongoing, and whether you have already seen the tangible impact on revenues and profitability? Thank you.
I will take the second call, and then I will leave Pier Giorgio again to cover the first one. I understand that in gross margin there are some questions because we have seen very good gross margins. So, PG, I think you discussed most of it, but please cover this again. As far as collaboration alliances, the truth of the matter is that because of the sheer size of our business, the net effect of Roche and Beckman is still relatively small. Roche, we really literally just started. There are a couple of tenders that have been won together. There is an interesting funnel of opportunities, mainly in Europe, that we will pursue. We cannot disclose how many, and simply because it's confidential to Roche. But in the current numbers, the effect is relatively limited. So opportunity to grow more. Beckman, we started Q4 last year. They bought a certain amount of instruments already. They are installing these systems in the large labs. I believe that there are two very large hospitals that we consider showrooms. where our system and the Beckman system are working together. So working in progress, again, net effect on Q1 results, negligible in China. And this is why we keep saying we are seeing this very interesting growth right now, and then we have the opportunity long-term to guarantee the growth in China, because then we are going to have this reservoir of opportunities that is coming through this Beckman alliance. As far as margins are concerned, PG, if you want to
take this. Sure. So really what convinced us that, you know, the 69%, 68-69% is the fair number is the trend, coming from actuals. If you look at our 2014 numbers, so we were running at a gross margin around 67%. Then we launched vitamin D-125. We won the Quest deal with vitamin D. And the stool panel picked up. So those elements, together with some economies of scale driven by volume, convinced us that the rate, gross margin rate between 68 and 69% is sustainable also in the foreseeable future. So basically it's actual trend. That's it.
And thank you for taking my question. If I may quickly follow up, does your margin forecast going forward includes negative impact from the price concession you've given to Sonic, or shall we expect just minor negative, not really impacting overall profitability?
It does. It does already in quarter one, because the new contract started with 2016. So already Q1 is considering the impact of Sonic discount.
Okay. Thank you for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosa, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Thank you.